Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Good morning to you. This is Talk Radio Breakfast with me, Julia Hartley Brewer. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. Comedian Dave Chaun is also joining me right now, though. Let's talk to Environment Secretary George Eustace. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Are you following every single one of the current rules tackling coronavirus?
Yes, as far as I'm aware. I'm doing all I can, I'm sure, as are everybody around the country, to follow the rules. And, you know, look, I think in these two cases you've highlighted with Boris Johnson's father and Jeremy Corbyn as well, they've apologised for that. Look, sometimes people forget or make errors. The important thing is that it's not done deliberately.
OK. We had a press conference with the Prime Minister yesterday. Basically, he announced, you know, he's sticking to his plan and talked about how we all have to follow our rules so we don't have to have a second lockdown. But it was very clear that despite all the doom and gloom that was being attempted to be given over in the press conference from Chris Whitty and Sir Patrick Vallance, that actually the figures really are not that worrying at all. We are not actually in a situation facing a second wave of the pandemic currently. We are not seeing exponential growth. Why then is the government continually bringing in new rules to curtail our lives and our freedoms and our economy when we are not facing a second wave?
Well, we are seeing a significant spike in cases, you know, up to...
We're testing more people.
Yes, but the proportion of tests that are positive has also significantly risen.
How significantly risen?
Well, it's gone. The number of positive tests has gone from around 1,000 a day when things started to pick up just about 2 weeks ago to 7,000 a day now. Mm-hmm. And sadly, of course, that's starting to feed through to a higher mortality rate. So
most of those cases are positive test results. Let's leave aside the false positive rate for now. But most of those, almost entirely, those are people without any symptoms whatsoever. They weren't even aware that they had coronavirus. So why should we be concerned?
Well, because we know that the mortality rate from the coronavirus, you know, can be quite significant. It's around five times higher than the mortality rate for people that get flu. And the difficulty is that if you don't check the spread of this disease, yes, many people will have no symptoms or will get over the symptoms, but those that they spread it to, a significant proportion will sadly die. So the reason that we are taking these measures is to try to dampen the spread of the virus. We can't control it entirely. We just have to try to dampen and frustrate the spread of it, if you like, in order to save lives. And that's what we're trying to do.
Since the beginning of September, three times as many people have died from flu and pneumonia than from coronaviruses. I mean, I absolutely understand how serious coronavirus is. Absolutely understand we need to take measures to contain. But we've seen a far bigger spike in those deaths since the start of September than we have in COVID, suggesting that the measures we already had in place were actually already working. Why? The question a lot of people are asking is, other than the hand washing and the social distancing, and which is all, you know, being done in places like Sweden that have never had a lockdown, why do we need other measures like a 10 p.m. curfew, like a limit on playing music in a pub and things like that, when there's really no evidence that that will make any difference at all?
Well, the difference between the coronavirus and you know, flu and pneumonia is the prevalence rate, really. So there's a high prevalence rate of flu, and therefore you're getting you know, a higher mortality. But proportionately, the number of people that die from flu who contract it is lower than the number of people will die when they contract the coronavirus. So that's why we treat this as differently, and why we're trying to prevent the spread of it, because it's very much a case of a stitch in time saves nine. If we intervene early through the rule of six nationally, but then through some of these targeted localized measures where we get local flare-ups, well, then we can control the spread of it and prevent it getting out of control. If it gets out of control, sadly, then you're you're limited to the number of tools that can solve that, and you end up back in the space of a lockdown.
What do you make of the Bank of England's chief economist, Andrew Haldane, who's talked about how there's been too much catastrophizing about the pandemic and about the economy, and says the collective anxiety is contagious about both, and that we are in the economics of chicken licking, people constantly running around saying the sky is falling in. When we talk up this threat of a second wave and talk up the threat of a second lockdown as a result of that, we are also effectively talking up more chances of a recession, aren't we? Should we not be in a situation where the government is sort of, you know, with obviously the sensible measures that we know work, social distancing, you know, washing your hands, evidence, I mean, I would say on balance that says that wearing a mask does help. Shouldn't the government be concentrating on that rather than scaring us all back into our homes again and basically causing more problems with our economy and possibly more deaths long term as a result?
Well, we're not really trying to scare people. What we're attempting to do through this is to act early and in a targeted way in response to local outbreaks, and to have a set of simple national rules, and the rule of six, and wearing a face mask is something I think people can understand. And the objective behind that is to ensure that we can keep pubs and restaurants open, that we can keep the economy moving, that people can still go to work. So it's precisely because we want to safeguard the economy that we're trying to strike this, you know, difficult balance of acting early in a targeted way, rather than waiting for the disease to get fully out of control. When more drastic action would be the only option left.
You talk about targeted measures. We spoke to Andy Burnham, the Greater Manchester Mayor, just a few moments ago. He's talking about how, you know, he and certainly the Liverpool Mayor, Steve Rotherham, not in favour of the 10 p.m. curfew on pubs and restaurants, don't believe that is actually working. But crucially, what they would like is more help for local businesses that are hit by these new rules. In terms of targeted measures, is that something the government is looking at, so actual help for those businesses that have effectively been forced to shut down?
Well, yes, the government, the Treasury have already announced that where we have these local lockdowns and where restaurants and pubs are forced to close, there is going to be a grant scheme to help those businesses, where there has to be a closure for 3 weeks. And so there's going to be a grant, I understand, of around £1,500 to help some of those businesses through what obviously is a difficult time when they have those localised shutdowns.
Let me just ask you, just finally, I know you have to go a very busy round of media interviews this morning. Today is the beginning of a new ban. It was due to start in April, but was delayed because of the pandemic, where businesses are banned from supplying plastic straws, stirrers and cotton buds across England. A long-awaited ban. How successful do you think that's going to be in stemming the flow of plastic into landfill and indeed into oceans?
Well, I think it's a very important step. So it's a ban on plastic in straws and in stirrers and in cotton buds. It builds on the ban or the charging that we've already put in place on single-use plastic bags, which has been a great success. And we're also working on plans for a deposit return scheme to reward people for returning plastic bottles. And also further measures to try to curtail the use of plastic in the supply chain. So there's a lot of things that we're doing. This is an important next step.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Delighted to be joined now by the Mayor of Greater Manchester, also, of course, a former Labour Health Secretary, Andy Burnham. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. Well, we saw the press conference with Boris Johnson, Chris Whitty and Sir Patrick Vallance yesterday that the northwest, along with the northeast of England, Yorkshire and Humberside, are seeing very high rates of coronavirus, far, far outstripping what's going on in the rest of the country. Why do you think the virus is still spreading in your area when you've had so many extra local lockdown measures for such a long time? What is going on?
I said it to you, Julia, back at the time that the national lockdown was lifted. I came on your programme and said, this is too early for the north of England. I think it was a decision taken more with London in mind. Our cases were still quite high at that time. And I felt very uneasy about it, as did many other people here. So the national lockdown was lifted with a higher number of cases here than in other parts of the country. And for that reason, I think we've struggled to get the numbers down over the summer. But there's kind of more sort of long-term reasons, isn't there? We have a north-south divide in this country. The economy in the north is different. There's more people in low-paid work. People have struggled to afford to self-isolate. There's poor quality housing in many parts of the north. I mean, the reasons I think are many, if we're honest. We can't just say it's one. It's a combination of reasons, Julia. But the truth is, it's obviously a really challenging picture for us all.
Indeed, I know you met with the Liverpool mayor, Metro Mayor, Steve Rotherham, and you've been sort of pretty basically putting up a joint force against the government. Well, to, you know, appeal to the government, I suppose, is a more positive way of putting at it, saying that really you do need some more local measures to be taken into account. For instance, having more money for local authorities, more help for local businesses, particularly those affected by this 10 p.m. curfew. And indeed calling for a review of that 10 p.m. curfew on pubs, restaurants and bars, which we know is absolutely killing the hospitality trade. What do you want the government to do instead of having that 10 p.m. curfew? Do you think that's just not necessary at all? What other measures would you want, if any?
No, I don't think the 10 p.m. curfew is working because it contradicts the local restrictions. So the local restrictions that we have are all about preventing social gatherings in the home. And we've supported the government on that to get the numbers down. The trouble with the 10 p.m. curfew, in my view, is that it creates more gatherings in the home. So this is where the government's thinking is muddled, in my view. It's actually helping spread the virus, but it's also hugely damaging hospitality businesses. But you then say, well, what more do we want, Julia? And Steve Rotherham and I did come together yesterday. You know, we've always said we're not against local restrictions, and we're always saying to the government we want to work in partnership with you. But it's difficult when restrictions are placed on our businesses without any form of proper local support. So, for instance, in Bolton, the pubs and the restaurants have been closed for about 3 to 4 weeks now. And people there who work in those pubs and those restaurants have had no local support, no local furlough scheme. And business owners haven't had proper compensation. And I would say, particularly to the Conservative Party, you know, how can you shut businesses without compensating them or supporting the people who work in those places? And it's very worrying, Julia, if today they close or restrict businesses in Merseyside without any financial support. Because in my view, if they carry on like that, the North will be levelled down this winter. And the core mission of this government, supposedly to level up the country, will be over.
What do you make of the front page of the Daily Mail today? Mr Boom versus Mr Doom, picture of Boris Johnson yesterday being very downbeat. And also Andy Haldane, who's the chief economist at the Bank of England, who has said that he says public concern over the pandemic and economic threats has been exaggerated. He said we had this responsibility to avoid catastrophizing. And he said we are in a state of sort of chicken licking style economics where collective anxiety is contagious and everyone's sort of running around saying the sky is falling in when actually it's not. We actually had some very positive news in terms of virus numbers nationally from the press conference yesterday. And obviously, you know, without the 10 p.m. curfew, we would have very positive news economically as well. Do you think the government is now going down the wrong road overall in terms of their handling of the pandemic and the subsequent economic costs?
Well, I don't envy the government, Julia. It's a really difficult position that they are in, and we are trying to help. But it would probably help the government if they would work more with us at a local level. Often we get decisions imposed upon us. If they'd asked me about the 10 p.m. curfew, I would have said to them that it's going to cause real problems for the police as people come out on the streets and go straight into the shops and the supermarkets. And it's probably going to make particularly younger people go straight to homes and other places to have large gatherings. So the problem has been all the way through. They've had an over-centralised approach to all of this. Test and trace is still not working in places like Greater Manchester. Let me give you one statistic. Of the contacts of people testing positive, only half are being reached by the national system. Now, that isn't good enough before the winter. So what I would say is if they'd worked more with us, we could have probably helped them more. And I would still say this to Boris Johnson today, who I do speak to. Please set up some sort of national consultative committee where we can iron out these issues together, because then there'll be more support for them when they come out into the public domain. And, as I say, it's not easy. I've tried to be constructive all the way through this.
You have still, been. You really have been.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Julian. I don't want to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but I'll be honest with you. If I'm looking at a winter in the Northwest at the moment, where the economic crisis, I don't believe, is fully broken, then it's going to be really tough. We've got a health crisis, an economic crisis to come. And this is where I would disagree with the Bank of England, with that fairly rosy sort of picture. The furlough scheme is ending at the end of October. Industries like aviation, Manchester Airport, a massive employer here, just can't come back anytime soon. Other parts of the economy might be able to, but they can't. So what happens? What happens is a huge number of redundancies. And I think when you've got a health crisis and an economic crisis hitting the north of England like that, then I think people will feel very gloomy about the future. And it's really only the government that can step in and stop that from happening.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Sir Bob Neill. He's chair of the Justice Select Committee and a Conservative MP and one of the leading rebels against the government when it came to those new emergency measures being brought in again and again by this government without any consulting of Parliament and certainly no debates and no votes. Well, yesterday the rebels came to an agreement with the government where Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary, said they would promise a vote on any significant measures that would be brought in that were across the nation. There would be a debate and a vote by MPs before those measures would be brought in. Let's talk to Sir Bob Neill about that then. Good morning to you.
Morning, Julia.
Morning. It's a concession from the government to sort of end what has been effectively rule by decree since March. Do you feel that you've got enough safeguards there against just the random measures being brought in by the government without any consultation?
Well, I think we've got enough given the circumstances that the Speaker had decided that for procedural reasons he couldn't accept my friend Sir Graham Brady's amendment. Given those circumstances, I think it was sensible to bank what we have. But I think we've also put the government very much on notice that they've got to act in good faith in this.
This is
going to be really genuine, proper votes, you know.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, this is especially after Sunday, you know, when we were told we were going to have new measures coming into force, and then a whole raft of new measures were brought in, which hadn't even been mentioned in advance by the government and came into law, and no one known anything about them.
No, I think the other bit of work that we still need to do, as well as having proper votes on the big national issues, which I think is a principle that we ought to stick to anyway, I also want to make sure that we have proper local consultation. Because you have some of those measures brought in and the local council leaders in those areas didn't know anything about them. Now, I don't want that happening in London. And that means not just talking to Sadiq Khan, the mayor. It also means talking to the London boroughs. Because, you know, the situation in Tower Hamlets is very different from the situation in Bromley.
Yeah, indeed.
So I want to have proper consultation at that level too.
Well, we spoke to the mayor of, the leader of Gateshead Council yesterday, and he said they had been talking to the government. He's in the northeast, obviously, about bringing in measures, and then the new measures were announced, but without the council leaders being formed in advance. We spoke to Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham just about 20 minutes ago, and he's basically joined forces with the Liverpool Metro Mayor Steve Rotherham, saying again that they want possible local conversations. They want a review of the 10 p.m. curfew and others. One of the key issues here is measures being brought in, which are very blunt instruments, massive effects on local economy, local businesses, and often no particular science or advice behind them. We know, certainly the 10pm pub curfew, Sage was not even asked to provide any input on it.
No, and I think those are exactly the sort of measures that we've got to start moving away from, because this is being too much driven by people who have, I'm sure, are very eminent in their scientific field, but perhaps don't have that broader view of the other effects. And also, it's being driven by some government departments which are too tightly focused, a little coterie of people, if you like. And I think that's the point that Graham Brady was making in an interview yesterday. The government's got to change the way it operates. It's got to broaden out the number of people it consults, and that includes MPs. And it's got to be more nuanced. I popped into my local pub in Chislehurst last night, Julia. And, you know, it was perfectly all right at 10 o'clock. There were not hordes of people about to pitch out onto the streets of suburban Chislehurst and you know, sort of suddenly spread the virus. It's really rather ridiculous.
The streets of Chislehurst are safe. But this is it. Yeah, I mean, the argument has really been, I mean, and again, I know it's something that Andy Burnham has spoken about before as well, that, you know, instead of having this curfew on all pubs and restaurants and bars, why not just simply, you know, withhold the licences of those landlords and restaurant owners who are not obeying the rules? Again, this is the whole thing. We're being told by the Prime Minister, someone we were told was a libertarian until he was elected, that he was, that, you know, we should just use our common sense. Constantly we're told, you know, British common sense and all of that. And yet, then we're constantly treated again and again as if we're naughty children being punished. I've likened it many times to the idea, you know, one kid is messing about in the class, having a wild party or whatever, and not socially distancing. And so the teacher decides to put everyone in detention for a month.
Yeah, it is disappointing, particularly for those of us who supported Boris, because we did rather think that he had fairly liberal, libertarian instincts and wanted to trust individuals. So I think a good example you flag up there, Julia, is... why don't we do the same as we're doing as they do in Paris with restaurants as opposed to bars? So where you're sitting down in a restaurant eating, then you can carry on beyond 10 o'clock. You're not going to be running around the tables mixing with each other. That's different perhaps from a bar if you've got lots of people who may be fairly sloshed. And then equally, police the thing properly, as you say. Apparently, if we did that Paris arrangement in London, that could be worth about £1 billion to the hospitality industry by March, and they're on their knees already. So it's that lack, I think, of common sense sometimes, that lack of nuance that's a problem. And I think the other thing we got from the government, as well as the votes, is I hope, and this is where we're going to have to hold their feet to the fire, a recognition that they've got to do things differently. You can't have this tight group in Downing Street in the Cabinet Office taking all the decisions to the exclusion people actually very often are out there in the real world.
Do you think that they have lost touch with the real world? Do you think that the government and the people making the decisions have almost become prisoners of their own scaremonger? We needed to be scared into our homes for the early stage of the lockdown. We were in a pandemic and we needed to save lives and, you know, stop the NHS being overwhelmed. I think, you know, 99% of people accept that. However, people now understand what the risks are. They know what we need to do to keep safe. Do you think that there's an argument where the government is being, it's driven the polling in terms of people being terrified and wanting more and more measures. And now the polling is driving government policy the other way around.
I think there is a risk of a vicious circle there. And it's a risk that always happens in government. Right? I think going back to previous governments, even Mrs. Thatcher towards the end, where you've been there and you get sort of slightly institutionalised into the way of doing things. And Parliament and challenge and scrutiny is all a bit of an inconvenience. And you may be convinced you're doing it for the best reasons, but that's not enough, I'm afraid. So I do think you're right that they had good reason to ramp up the rhetoric to start with. But it's the hardest bit is getting the cork out the bottle slowly sometimes, isn't it? And so we just need to dial down now, I think, and get away from that rhetoric where we're almost scaring people to live a normal life. And we can't accept this is a new normal, Julia. We've got to get people back to what is a recognisable form of social and economic life. Otherwise, we'll do more harm, I fear, in the long term than even the pandemic would do.
And just finally, after Stanley Johnson has been photographed, the Prime Minister's father, without a mask in a shop, we don't know whether, of course, he's got a health exemption or not. But also Jeremy Corbyn breaking the rule of six, having a dinner party for nine and a photograph on the front page of the Sun. Have you kept to every single COVID rule throughout?
I've done my best. The trouble is, it's remembering what the rules are, in truth, Julia. And that's part of the problem, isn't it? I'm not going to be holier than thou. I do my best. But that's the other real issue. If it's so complicated that people can't remember it, ministers can't remember it, What hope has poor Joe and Jane Public got?
Across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker. Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.